All right, let's keep talking the NBA. We'll talk some of this subject as well as the Utah Jazz with our next guest. You can find him on Twitter at Ben Golliver. You can read him in Sports Illustrated. It is Ben Golliver. Ben, thanks for joining
us. Hey, Ben.
How you guys doing?
We're debating the Charles Barkley, LeBron James argument going on right now. And I mean, I think I thought the known assumption about Charles Barkley was that he's an entertainer. He's not really a basketball analyst. LeBron, being as smart as he is on the floor, I thought would be able to shake off a guy like Charles, who's just up there on TNT trying to entertain people. Were you surprised that this kind of finally got to LeBron? Is this a sign of other issues going on with the Cavs?
Yeah, there's a bunch of things going on. I mean, LeBron's always been a little bit sensitive. He's kind of had a soft spot, I think, whenever his masculinity kind of gets called out. And Charles did use that word, whiny. And I think maybe that's kind of what, you know, the button that kind of, you know, got LeBron going. But there's a lot going wrong in Cavsville right now. I mean, they're not playing very well. LeBron is playing way too many minutes. Their midseason addition of, you know, adding Kyle Korver, it looked great on paper, but it hasn't totally played out maybe as well as they had hoped for. And they're kind of in the dog days, just waiting for J.R. Smith to get back. And then while that's happening, you know, Golden State's just cruising along, playing incredible basketball, keeping the minutes off of their star players. And really, they're coasting, you know, to home court advantage overall, whether that's in the Western Conference or in a potential finals matchup. So I can understand why LeBron would be a little bit angsty, but certainly his replies, you know, both in the depth of them in terms of how many different, you know, buttons he tried to push back on Charles, and then also just kind of how feverish it was. I mean, it did seem pretty emotional from LeBron. That was both surprising to me.
So how's it going to end with these two, in your opinion? Can they kiss and make up at this point?
Well, to me, Charles is smart enough to know when to take a loss. You know, I mean, he does this for a living. LeBron plays basketball for a living. And Charles' job right now, I think, is to get into arguments, and he often wins them. But I don't think he really picks on LeBron. You know, I mean, he's had his comments about everybody over the years. Certainly the Warriors feel like they were kind of targeted by a lot of his comments in terms of their style of play and, you know, whether they were a little bit soft and kind of built from the outside in, a jump shooting team. I mean, he went after them for two straight years. So I think Charles understands that, you know, his job is to kind of push these guys, to find whatever weaknesses there might be among these championship contenders. Because, look, we can all sit around and praise the Cavaliers for an hour. I mean, that's pretty easy to do. Wow, amazing ball handling by Kyrie Irving. Oh, LeBron, such a special, smart player. I mean, it's easy to make those kinds of statements. And same thing goes with the Warriors. Wow, what an unbelievable shooter Steph is, right? It's much more difficult to kind of hone in on the type of weaknesses that could cost these teams the title. And, you know, it's not easy to go against the grain. Like last year during the playoffs, for example, I was really critical of Golden State kind of getting complacent when they would, you know, get up in games and taking their foot off the gas and being a little bit too willing to try to make the highlight pass as opposed to the smart pass. And I never knew if that was going to come back to bite them, but, it, you know, in the finals, it finally did. But, you know, along the way, you hear from all the Warriors fans, you know, kind of chirping at you, saying, oh, you're crazy, you're dumb. And so I actually kind of respect Charles Barkley for going out on a limb with a lot of his statements, because I'm sure he's hearing from people that he's stupid all day long.
Ben Golliver's our guest, 1320K fan. Well, one of the names that's kind of popped up as another potential acquisition for the Cavs is Shelvin Mack, an on-and-off backup point guard for the Jazz. I don't think he necessarily moves the needle for anybody, but do you get the impression that the Jazz, they've had a recent lull, lost 3 of 4. Do you think they would try and make any major upgrades coming up over the next month before the trade deadline?
Yeah, that's interesting because, you know, I don't know how that would qualify as an upgrade for them. I just thought Utah did pretty much all of their work during the summer, right? I mean, I always compared it to like almost like an Amazon checklist when you're just going like right down the list of things that you need to order. I mean, they were looking to get more versatile in the front court, and that was Diao. They were looking to, you know, kind of fill things out, you know, past that with, you know, some veteran experience, guy like Joe Johnson. I mean, sort of all the things that we had kind of harped on in terms of their weaknesses, and really centered on, you know, George Hill being the biggest acquisition of all of them. I mean, a real upgrade at point guard was number one on their list, and they got that. So, I mean, to me, they pretty much filled all their major holes, and when those guys are healthy, it looks pretty good. Now, that's been the tricky part for them, but even so, they're right in the mix where they want to be in the Western Conference. And you know, I actually think nationally, I put this in my midseason report card for the Jazz, and they probably haven't gotten enough credit nationally for the jump that they've made, because it's not that often teams jump from the West lottery into the West playoff picture. And if they do, that generally means they're going to kind of be in that 6, 7, 8 range because the top is so tough to crack. I mean, if you look at the landscape right now, I mean, Utah should be, top four. They should win the Northwest Division. I mean, despite these little lulls that you're mentioning, I mean, they've got the depth. They've got the proven defense. They don't have a ton of, rotation holes. And so, to me, when you have a team make that kind of leap, they probably deserve that credit. And part of the issue, I think, is we've all been waiting for it for a couple of years now. So it's not a huge surprise. Everybody's kind of been picking the Jazz. Oh, this is going to be the year. This is going to be the year. But I still think they deserve that credit. I don't think that they need to be a big mover at the trade deadline. If I'm Oklahoma City, I'm definitely trying to find another shooter. I mean, that's easier said than done. If I'm Portland, I'm definitely trying to, improve inside, find an interior defender, rim-protecting type presence. I think there's some teams in that Northwest Division who need to make moves. But to me, if I'm Utah, I'm just kind of sitting pretty and hoping people can stay healthy.
How big of an impact will the All-Star selection have for Gordon Hayward in his decision whether or not to stick around here in Utah?
Well, it can't hurt. I mean, that is one thing you hear from guys around the league if they're in smaller markets, is they just want to make sure they're getting their attention and they're just due, right? And, going back in the Northwest Division again, a guy like Damian Lillard, right? I mean, he's certainly got some attention up in Portland, but every year he gets snubbed, and that's a point of frustration for him. He's made that known. So it helps when, your case to Gordon can be, look, not only have we built this roster around your skills and put you in a position to succeed, not only do we have Rudy Gobert locked in as sort of this franchise changing centerpiece on defense, but you're able to get your recognition for your elite level of play, and it's not costing you, whether that's from a visibility standpoint or whatnot. I don't know him well enough personally to say whether, the glitz and the glamour is going to influence him. You know, having the ability to, a little taste of that is going to be a top thing on his checklist in terms of what he's looking for. I mean, usually guys like to be comfortable. They like to get as much money as possible, and they want to feel like they have a real chance at winning. If I'm Utah, I think you can offer him all of those things, right? I mean, he seems pretty comfortable there in the community. They can offer him the most money, of course. And I think they've got a real nice, promising outlook here over the next 3 to 5 years when you look at, the potential core pieces that they've brought together. And, there's some other questions. I mean, okay, what's Favors' role going to be long-term there, given, kind of a shaky season for him health-wise? Does it make sense to throw huge money to keep both Hayward and Hood? I mean, these are some questions that Utah is going to eventually have to answer, but I think that they're in position financially to take care of who they want to take care of. And I think for sure, right at the top of the list, kind of 1B or 1A to Rudy Gobert is going to be Hayward. And usually that is winds up being the deciding factor more so than, personal accomplishments or anything else like that.
And then, Ben, I mean, the first month of the season, George Hill looked like he was a max player. He's certainly come back to earth since then. But what type of money? I mean, he can get up to $30 million this offseason. I don't think anyone's going to pay him that much. But what type of money should the Jazz expect to have to pay if they want to bring him back for the next 4 years?
Yeah, it's going to be plus starter money for sure. I don't ever think he was going to be in that max conversation because as well as he played early on, I mean, his track record's pretty clear in terms of what kind of player he is. He's going to be in that, 10 to 15 range in terms of best point guards. And that's going to be kind of that. So you could stack him up and, some comps in terms of salaries I'd be looking at would be, guys like a Reggie Jackson in Detroit. I mean, scale up his contract number to fit the new salary cap, and that's probably going to be his range. So that's probably, I would guess, upper teens per year for a guy like George Hill, just off the top of my head. I haven't put a ton of analysis time into that. One thing that teams are going to have to choose, and you can put Utah in this mix, is there's a lot of good young point guards out there. Yeah. And not only that, there's even more coming in this draft. I mean, there's a lot of young point guard talent, and a lot of times those guys are either on their rookie contracts or they're going to be on those second contracts where it's a little bit cheaper. So when you're trying to make a decision on a George Hill or even his replacement in Indiana, a guy like Jeff Teague, I mean, do you want to pay the big dollars for a guy, who could potentially start to wane towards the end of that contract? Another example of this is Kyle Lowry. I mean, he's probably the best point guard in the Eastern Conference right now. But do you want to have to commit, a 4 or 5 year max contract to him? I mean, that will make you pause. So teams are going to have to weigh this value proposition of, do you pay the big money for the proven veteran who what he gives you, or do you look for younger solutions and try to work in some of these younger point guards at a lower price number? Now, I think if you're Utah, You've been building this for a while, so I wouldn't cheap out on a guy like George Hill. And he's so solid. He fits exactly what they do perfectly in terms of his size defensively, his basketball IQ, and the fact that he doesn't need to dominate the ball. You can let guys like Hayward and Hood kind of be your lead playmakers. You kind of just fit in George Hill around them. But certainly, it does get expensive when you've already committed to Gobert. So there's going to be an odd man out. I couldn't tell you who it is, but for sure, when I'm looking at their chart, Hayward's by far the number one priority, and Hill would be behind him.
You can find him on Twitter, @BenGulliver. Read him at Sports Illustrated. Great stuff, Ben. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Ben.
All right, guys. Take care.